And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to the latest episode of The Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. It's been a minute since our last episode.
It was like
we did four in a week, so I think that we sort of like let, we let last week unfold. Before reconvening the pod here, Marcus Freeman is officially Notre Dame's head coach. He was introduced at a press conference that, you know, there was a lot of pomp and circumstance around it, but it was well produced and well done, especially in contrast to a certain Notre Dame rivals introductory press conference with Lincoln Riley at USC. Then Marcus goes out on the road recruiting for an entire week. The class basically holds together. We will see if it gets all the way there over the line on Wednesday with National Signing Day. And then last weekend, the first two practices of the new era. I was there on Sunday, talked to Marcus and Myron Tagovailoa-Amosa and Jared Patterson after the fact. But Matt, I mean, from a distance a little bit, we have a lot to recap. We can talk about potential staff additions, you know, where things are going, you know, to the organization or in football. Like how have you sort of processed, okay, this is a first time head coach. How does it look like it's going from your point of view?
Yeah. You know, I was in Vegas for most of this past week at the College Football Hall of Fame banquet and a number of college forums and panels that take place throughout the week around that event. And, you know, that dinner, there's 2,000 people there from pretty much all of college football, past and present. And the buzz there was similar to the buzz, I think, anywhere else. Was kind of like disbelief a little bit that Brian Kelly went to LSU. Not that he left Notre Dame. I mean, I think to a man, every single person I talked to was like, not surprised he left, just surprised he left for there. And they're all anxious and eager and excited to see what Marcus Freeman brings to the table at Notre Dame. It's been quite the honeymoon so far, I would say, between the intro press conference a week ago, 94 feet with Jay Billis, going up to the men's basketball game that same day against Kentucky. Good juju, obviously, with Notre Dame beating Kentucky.
His first top 10 win.
And Marcus first, yeah. Braves first one in 4 years too, but 5 years, I think. Did not mention the word family while addressing a basketball crowd. I was waiting for that just to see what it sounded like. Good on him for avoiding that despite the size of his family. But, you know, it honestly reminded me a little bit after seeing the court storming and the excitement just around the campus in general from afar. You know, it reminded me a little bit like when they beat Kentucky in 2012, which was during the layover period before the BCS title game against Alabama. And I distinctly remember, because I was only my second year covering the program, and so many people I talked to who were both at Notre Dame and a graduate of Notre Dame at that time were of the belief of, you know, it's never been a more exciting time to be a Notre Dame, you know, athletics fan, period, right now. The vibes are just off the chart and, you know, different circumstances right now, but I've got very similar vibes from that fan base this week. I mean, everything just seems to be clicking. And again, they call it a honeymoon period for a reason. He's undefeated, at least for a couple more weeks. And, you know, everything has turned out extremely well so far, but, definitely different. Definitely a contrast to the Walker Howard video that was going around last night, the LSU commitment.
Different kind of energy.
Different kind of energy with Brian Kelly just throwing up an L or whatever it was he was doing and dancing. You know, that was going around among former and probably current players. And one of them said to me, "Why? I really hope Showtime can do their season with series at LSU this coming year, because I would watch that the same way they did it with us back in 2015 at Notre Dame." Not wrong there. I mean, I would almost want to cover that team like from afar for a year just to see what kind of social experiment that will be. But you know, back in the here and now of South Bend, things are clicking really, really well right now. Obviously, there's a little bit of news we got to get to as far as coaching staff and personnel updates in regards to the Fiesta Bowl. But yeah, it's just been, you know, this is usually a dull period in the year, and it's been anything but, at least from a news standpoint.
It's interesting to sort of have everything refreshed. Usually you'd go out to a bowl practice and it's like, all right, I'm going to do a body count. Can I find the 85 scholarship players? And then that's it. You know, you're out there on Sunday. It's like, okay, are the musical choices different? Is the format changed? And, you know, there was some format changes where they do these, Marcus called them openers, where it's, you know, they do the competitive period after stretching, like right out of the gate. And there's a winner and a loser, and the loser runs a gasser. The width of the field, I think twice, and the winners just get to sit there and kind of applaud them on, as Kurt Heinisch did in very trolly kind of ways, which I appreciated. So he's trying to tweak things without changing them. And even though a tweak is a change or an enhancement is a change, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of differences. It was interesting to me when Marcus was asked about getting more involved in the offense. And I sort of expect him to be like, no, like I don't have time for that. And I don't think that's the best use of my skills. And he was like, yeah, you know, get with Tommy a little bit more. And, you know, I want to be balanced, you know, basically some kind of boilerplate stuff, but how he uses his time moving forward, I think will be fascinating, because there's a limited supply of it. He has expertise in some areas and very limited knowledge in others. And I think he's probably going to want to round out the limited knowledge in others. But playing to his strength is also a big part of it. Playing to his strength is sort of the human touch, tactile connections with the players. You know, building relationships with offensive starters for the team next year. How do you recruit Kevin Austin and Jared Patterson to come back while figuring out what you want to do as your offensive line coach and maybe a new receivers coach? So it's, there's so much for him to do. You know, you mentioned the honeymoon period. That's part of it. I think a grace period would be, you could call it that too, because there's going to be some missteps along the way. I don't know how there couldn't be as a first time head coach, where you're just like suddenly the CEO of a Fortune 100 company. I'm going to be interested to sort of see how he navigates the ups and downs, which there's so much more to what he's doing than the final score of the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, look, Mario Cristobal took over for Willie Taggart at Oregon and at the end of 2017, I believe they got smoked by Boise State in the bowl game that year. And that was not at all indicative of what the Mario Cristobal era ended up being at Oregon. They won the Rose Bowl in his second year there. I mean, I think things turned out pretty well for all folks in Eugene while he was there. It's funny hearing you talk about Marcus Freeman and his involvement at practice. I think the last practice, at least the last practice I was at, we had a full one back in the summer. And Brian Kelly was very hands-on with receivers that day, and it felt a little over the top. And then I spoke to someone on that side of the ball later that day who said, yeah, that was all for you guys. He's never once come over to this, to this room. They were all looking at him like, what are you talking about? We've never run this route before in our life. Why are you telling us to run it this way? Why are you joking with us? Again, the word authenticity has been thrown around a lot in the last 10 days or so since Marcus Freeman's been anointed the next head coach. So I imagine whatever we do see out of him at practice will be a little bit more genuine. Maybe we'll see a little bit more practice than we've gotten to do in the past, but that will figure itself out next year. It's definitely been, it's been different. And yeah, we still don't know how things are going to shake out staff wise. I mean, all indications I've gotten is like Marcus is taking this, like he's treating the Fiesta Bowl seriously. Like this isn't a tryout. This isn't.
He said it's just, not a charity game. I think it's the term he used. You know, when somebody asked like, what, did you try out some younger players for experience for next year? It's like, no. This isn't like a charity game. Like this is a real deal.
I was told, look for him to make an outside hire defense coordinator, which surprised me a little bit just because you've got nearly a full defensive staff there. And as a head coach, you are the de facto defense coordinator given your background. And I'd be curious, you know, what you would want to get out of that, especially when you're hiring a coordinator who's already got a staff ready made for you. Because again, those forced marriages don't always work out. But when I was asked for names, they said, check back with us after the bowl. Marcus is literally not doing that stuff until after the Oklahoma State game. His full focus right now is on beating Oklahoma State, which is good. I mean, he addressed this, I think, on College Game Day or the College Football Playoff Selection Show on ESPN. Right off the top, he's like, we've not won a major bowl game or New Year's bowl game in 28 years. Like, you know, essentially, who are we to overlook this? Like, yeah, we would have liked to be in the playoff, but like, we need to take care of business. It's nice to not have that elephant in the room. It's nice to have it kind of addressed head on. And we'll see how that works out as far as how this game goes. I mean, I know on Monday he did not say he had figured out yet who would call the defensive plays. Did he elaborate on that?
No, he didn't have an answer for that on Sunday either. You know, the way he described it was, I think they'll be answered in the next couple of days. But when he was out recruiting, he basically had told Mickens and Elston, like, you guys need to get started on the game plan. Like, that's not something Marcus would just sort of delegate. But because he's out recruiting, he's like, you guys get started. I will join you when I can on this. You know, so does, and I think if you let somebody else call the game plan, does that turn into sort of like a Reese audition in the Camping World Bowl from 2 years ago? I don't know. You know, Marcus Freeman is able to, he doesn't need to like abide by any previous precedents set by Brian Kelly, but, that would be interesting to sort of see if Marcus uses the next 3 weeks as like an evaluation of like, could I promote Mickens? Could I promote Elston? Like, where do I want to go with any of this? Do I want to do a co-coordinator situation? I don't have an answer for that, nor do I think Marcus has an answer for that as we recorded 11:55 a.m. Eastern on Monday, December 13th. That's really sort of what the next few weeks are about. But I do think, you know, the names that have been bandied a little bit about as potential staff hires, I think that Notre Dame has sort of the youthful energy part down. Getting a little bit more experience could be beneficial over the long haul for Marcus Freeman's first staff.
Yeah. So Nick Lozinski was the only like kind of new name I think we got any official public clarity on, and clarity, I mean, his assignments for this game, as far as being special teams coordinator and kind of de facto as linebackers coach, just given his experience there and given what Marcus Freeman is tasked with doing right now. I mean, that's a name we talked about this, I think, on one of our many podcasts a week ago that probably deserves serious consideration for the full-time linebackers coach job. When you look at, you know, his connections to the place, how much he's done there in a number of different roles as a coach, as an analyst the past couple of years. And frankly, again, the surprise that he did not go with Clark Lee to Vanderbilt to take on a full-time assistant coaching position there. Offensive line is the big one for me. Obviously, defense coordinators, no small matter either, but you know, it's our understanding Jeff Quinn will coach through the bowl game, but will not return after that. It's also our understanding that like this is, you know, part of this deal with Tommy Rees, like full autonomy means full autonomy. Like he can go out and hire pretty much whoever he wants to be his offensive line coach. Who's that going to be? I don't know. I mean, I know a lot of Notre Dame fans would love to see Harry Heisting come back. From my understanding, he's not exactly hating retirement right now and dying to come back in. Obviously, that could change with a strong pitch perhaps, and when he looks at the talent on Notre Dame's roster, but I would still bet against that happening. But that's a really important position, as we saw through basically the tale of two halves that were Notre Dame season this year up front. I mean, they were so bad the first half of the season, and so much better the second half of the season that, you know, there's just no underestimating, you know, how important it is for Tommy Rees to get this hire right.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And I, you know, one of the things with Reese that I kind of wanted to see, this is before Brian Kelly left, was like, I wanted to see like how Reese would pick out his own staff if he had the authority to do so, which now he does. You know, that's part of the autonomy piece, I believe, is that, you know, you get not just, you're not just a bystander in what happens at offensive line. You're not just a bystander in how the skill positions are staffed. So that, I'm going to be fascinated to sort of see how that all that shakes out. But I think we're, you and I are probably in agreement on this one, is if you can find, I would get the best teacher for offensive line coach over the best recruiter. That may be the only position on staff that I would feel that way, where you would skew so hard towards the player development. If there was a maximum number of like skill points you had to divide up between teaching and recruiting, offensive line, that's a, it's a teaching position first and foremost, maybe more than any other position on the field.
Yeah. Teaching development. And you know, I don't want to dismiss recruiting because obviously we spent a lot of time talking about how important that is, but that is, especially at Notre Dame, like that's a position that can almost recruit itself.
Tell me the last poor recruiter Notre Dame had as his offensive line coach.
Is that like a trick question? Am I supposed
to? I don't know. Point? I don't think there was.
Oh,
one.
Okay.
I mean, the freaking Joe Moore Award is named after Notre Dame's former offensive line coach. Yeah. This is an offensive line school. This is an offensive line football program. I think Notre Dame will do just fine recruiting offensive linemen moving forward. That just is, that's what Notre Dame is. The fact that they've started two true freshmen at left tackle is an aberration, but that's worth figuring out. Like, how did things get to this point? But
well, also, two true freshmen are really good. It's not like,
yeah, and they're also down to these guys. One's a freshman All-American. The other one would have been a freshman All-American if he was healthy. So, you know, it's just, it's rare that that would happen at a place like this. They're not exactly like, oh man, we can barely keep the offense together here. But it's, look, that should be a very desirable job. Offensive line coach at Notre Dame should be kind of one of those like niche glamour assistant position coaches in college. To say that the offensive line coach at Notre Dame is like, everyone like, wow, you have great players and they just keep coming. Like that's not going to change who with whoever it is. So we'll see. I've heard that there are at least two guys with pro backgrounds that were interested in the job, that are not coaching in the NFL right now. So we'll see, but they should have a ton of candidates. And I mean, unlike when they promoted Jeff Quinn a few years ago, like I don't know if they had the world's greatest roster of like incoming guys. It was like an assistant offensive line coach. It was Wisconsin.
Oh, when they hired him?
Yeah. It was Wisconsin.
It was Justin Fry, who's now at UCLA. Fry. And a guy with the,
he was at BC Bucs, at the time, right?
He was at BC at the time. I think they had a guy who's with Tampa Bay now. Mm-hmm. And that,
Gilbert,
that was a rigged race, by the way.
Yeah,
everyone at Notre Dame will tell you.
I just think that Notre Dame should have options there. You know, and if they make a move at one of the skill positions, whether that's like Lance Taylor coaching receivers and you hire a running backs coach, or Lance Taylor stays a running back coach and maybe you're looking for a new receivers coach, like that's where I would devote more skill points to. Like, you need a great, great recruiter to join your staff in that role.
Yeah, for special teams coordinator too. I mean, I think you've thrown out the name Terry Combs, and that's like pure, I think, speculation on your part, or like what I would do on your part. I don't know if there's been any contact between the two parties, but I'd imagine that's a guy who probably needs a fresh start after the way things went for him at Ohio State, really these past 2 years. That's a guy who has connections to some people at Notre Dame, and a guy who is an absolute bulldog of a recruiter. To the point that when he got promoted to defense coordinator at Ohio State, I remember Ohio State fans and media basically saying, like, he's a recruiter. He shouldn't be a coordinator. Like, let him do this thing. Like, you know, he's very kind of specialized in that department. He was a very, very successful high school coach in Cincinnati before Brian Kelly had hired him to his staff when he got there in 2007. And that's a spot where, you know, kind of like running backs coach, like you said, but also just looking at what Notre Dame is replacing, Brian Polian. I mean, Brian Polian was a really good recruiter. He knew how to get after it. He had SEC experience. He was their connection in Hawaii. We all know about Manti Te'o, you know, what Brian Polian was on the staff.
Good on the West Coast too. I mean, knew where to go in California.
Yes. That's a spot where not that you can't be one, or you got to be one or the other, but yes, like offensive line coach should be as much more about development and production. Special teams coordinator perhaps is much more about recruiting. And I'll be curious to see what direction they go in for that one. Marty Biagi, maybe another name that could come up, who's at Purdue right now, who was an analyst on special teams for Brian Kelly. I think he left after 2016, but he's also a guy with some Texas and Louisiana ties who knows the lay of the land down there and could help them get some players. So I'll be curious to see what direction they go in with a number of these open spots, but it's a pretty stable ship right now for an operation that just underwent a massive overhaul. I mean, or leadership change. I mean, the winningest coach in program history ups and leaves after 12 years. And usually that's cause for disaster. I think on a previous podcast, I had said, I expect Notre Dame to have received some buyout money from LSU, with Brian Kelly leaving for another job. Someone who would know corrected me on that and said, I don't think there was a buyout. I think Jack Swarbrick's attitude had always been, if Brian Kelly wanted to leave for another job, this is Notre Dame. You should be happy where you are. It's a private school. We don't have the contract in front of us. We'll probably never get it in front of us, but it's interesting to hear the different interpretations of how that exit may have ultimately played out, but it's been different. It's been entertaining to say the least for those looking down at Louisiana and seeing Brian Kelly learn a new language. By the way, I'm sorry. You'll never convince me that Muffet McGraw, again, told yesterday that she's getting a statue, is not the ultimate troll job to the winningest Notre Dame coach who does not have a statue. Like, not that she doesn't deserve it, but right. The timing of that is just
Shamrock bump.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. I thought so.
I was explaining the Shamrock bump to our friend Aaron Taylor because he got inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame this week in Las Vegas. There's decent Notre Dame contingent out there, all things considered. They obviously had a lot to take care of back in South Bend, but he was like, tell me about the Shamrock bump. And I was like, look, man, you, Clark Lee, Marcus Freeman, all you guys are getting, yeah, Muffet McGraw, Tom Rinaldi, Mick Asaph. It goes on and on. I'm just waiting for our boy Chris Fink to get picked up right before the playoffs.
Joe Schmidt got engaged. I mean, that's
there you go.
That's a good, very strong effort.
I saw our old friend Brandon Wimbush, who joined Andy Staples' show.
I haven't had a chance to listen to that.
He's killing it, man. I'm really happy for him.
Yeah, same. I don't know if that will be a reason why we can or cannot get Marcus back on the show. I don't know if Notre Dame wants him to get a Shamrock bump from here. Like one bump may be all that they're looking for out of that guy.
Like we'll an extra see. Star to your 24/7 rating or your rivals.
Yeah.
Rating.
Suddenly Notre Dame's going to go on a tear and never lose another game. But I guess we should probably get into Kyle Hamilton, Kyron Williams. We haven't talked about those guys yet, both declared for the draft, both opting out of the bowl game. I was a little surprised. Williams went that route mainly because I heard he was having should I come back? Thinking about it, there was at least a flicker.
Come back for another year or
another year. Okay. There was a flicker of that. I don't know how serious it ever got, but when there was a flicker of that, I thought that would have led to I'll play one more game and then leave. That would have been the most likely outcome. Hamilton, even if Notre Dame made the playoff, he would have played, but it wouldn't have been 75 snaps. You know, it would have been a limited rotational role. He has not played in such a long time. So that I guess I'm not surprised in the end. I thought maybe they would be they would sort of stick with Hamilton's assistant coach thing that he did in the second half of the season. Maybe Williams could have done something like that, but Marcus, his position was more once you declare from your draft, you're a former player here. You can be on the sideline during game, but they didn't move to like sort of re-recruit them or say like, yeah, be around the Goog and help us in meetings. You know, Kyron, you help with Lance. Kyle, you continue to help with O'Leary. So that was maybe a little bit of a surprise, but certainly not a surprise that they're leaving Notre Dame after this season.
Yeah, that part of it's a little bit of a surprise, especially when you hear so many people come out publicly and say we wouldn't be here without them, which they wouldn't. I mean, they're probably their two best players. Not surprised that they're declaring for the draft. Not terribly surprised that they're sitting out for the bowl game. One of the great ironies in college football, and it's becoming more and more commonplace now, thankfully. But it's like Ryan Kelly quit on a team in the middle of a playoff race, and we're gonna like criticize players for not necessarily quitting, but like protecting their future and their bodies. And in Kyle Hamilton's case, he might not have had a choice. I mean, it was not a great injury that he had suffered against USC. So I'm fine with it. The more power to the players, the better. A little surprised to hear you say that Marcus Freeman essentially told them stuff is mostly off limits to them in the time between now and the bowl game. But, it is what it is in that regard. I'm not surprised either guy declared. A little more surprised by Kyron for all the reasons you mentioned. But like those guys, they earned their keep here. I mean, they were awesome.
There's nothing, does anything happen in bowl games to establish players that help their draft stock?
Only if you're an unknown.
Yeah. By definition, they're not established, right? Like could Aiden Hutchinson go number two overall by dominating Georgia and Alabama? Yeah. I mean, I guess that could move him up a slot, which is valuable.
It's more like Hunter Renfrow didn't do anything all year. And now he's catching 10 balls against Alabama. Like, who's this guy?
Exactly. Kyle Hamilton certainly is not going to go from a top five pick to a top five pick. Kyron Williams, I think you know what you need to know, like really good speed, but not elite. Awesome change of direction, incredible toughness, great blitz pickup, developing as a receiver. Like, I don't think anything happens against Oklahoma State without its defensive coordinator that is going to make you be like, well, this is a first round pick all of a sudden.
Did they make an announcement on Knowles? Because I know Ohio State said he'll start January 2nd, and Oklahoma State at least initially didn't really address like whether he's sticking out for the bowl or not. I assume he's not going to, but
yeah, unless I'm mistaken, and we'll have great podcasting here and I'll Google it. But I read that he was leaving now, like he won't coach in the bowl game.
That would make sense. I just had not heard anything definitive from Mike Gundy in that regard.
Yeah, if the website Pistols Firing is to be believed, it says Jim Knowles will not coach in the bowl game, set to make $1.9 million annually at Ohio State.
If Oklahoma State wins this game, you got to change your Twitter handle to Pistol Pete.
Well, I've already been Purdue Pete because I was starting at linebacker there, according to Ryan
Harris. Oh, that's right.
Earlier in the year. Boilermaker Pete. It's interesting because like I absolutely 100% take Marcus at his word, both on the record and on background. Like this game really freaking matters a lot. But also it's like, all right, well, one team doesn't have its defense coordinator. One team lost its head coach. One team lost its two best players overall. You could just bake in that Kyle Hamilton hasn't played in a while. How does all that fit together? I don't know, but it certainly diminishes the, like, you're not going with a full deck against Oklahoma State, nor is Oklahoma State going with a full deck against you. It's not hard to imagine, like, let's say Notre Dame lost the game 35-31. Is that really going to diminish the optimism around Marcus Freeman for the next 8 months?
Only if he has like some really awful in-game decision making. Like, it's a very specific scenario.
Other than that, probably not. And then if they win, if they win and he never punts and goes for two on every touchdown, nobody's going to care. Like, it's like, this is the best thing ever. It's just going to be fascinating to think ahead to January 2nd or January 1 at night when we're recording our post-game Shamrock episode. Like, how the perceptions of Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame football will have changed. I'm guessing they probably won't very much, but I've been wrong many, many times before, including about bowl games, in terms of what they meant to Notre Dame in the moment and what they meant to Notre Dame after the fact. So that's going to be interesting to sort of see how that shakes out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would have to be something very specific, like, you know, going for it, never punting when maybe you should, or, you know, yanking Jack Cohn for, I know it's probably wouldn't be his call, but, you know, getting too cute with the quarterback situation, something of that nature would have to be something to really draw the ire of the fan base in this small sample size game, as big of a game as it is. The one thing about Kyron I want to get back to real quick too is we've spent so much time talking about his juice and energy that he brings to that program on and off the field every single day. I'm not saying, oh, Kyron's not there. Like, if you're juiceless, you're useless, or whatever the say it is. But like, I don't see the harm in having that guy around, whether he's playing in the game or not, between now and the bowl game. It's only a couple of weeks, and I don't think there'd be any harm done, other than maybe him being upset that he's not allowed to be around, because I'm just surprised the communication on both sides wasn't a little bit more clear or better, or there wasn't a better understanding of what everyone was getting themselves into with that decision. The other thing that's interesting, as Notre Dame probably pursues a defense coordinator, is the market for defense coordinators in the country right now is absolutely insane. When you look at the openings, Penn State just hired Manny Diaz, but you've got Notre Dame, you've got Oklahoma State, you've got
Georgia,
you've got Clemson. Oregon, wait, did you Miami, say Clemson, Texas A&M now, Mike Elko, old friend, going to Duke, getting introduced as we speak right now.
Despite never appearing on the Shamrock. Yeah. I don't think it existed back
then. Did not exist. So yeah,
no,
yeah.
Throw no fault of our own.
We were born a little too late in that regard. I said to Brandon Wimmer, so you were born a little too early. But he's got it all figured out with the NIL stuff now. I don't think we recorded right after Marcus Freeman was introduced on Monday. I thought his recruiting comments about how the head coach needs to be involved with everything in that regard was pretty.
The lead recruiter on everybody.
Yeah.
That was a, I mean, whoever asked that question was like, that was perfectly phrased.
Yeah, that was good. I saw him on SportsCenter while I was sitting at a hotel bar in Las Vegas. Not surprising, but noteworthy. And then Jack Swarbrick's comments. I don't know if it was just you or if he said on a podium afterwards.
No, that was in the Dabo Swinney comments.
Yeah.
It was like me and Pat Forty. There might have been one other reporter, but that was an aside. And I asked because, I mean, I've talked to Swarbrick on the record and other instances as well about recruiting, because I've written some pointed things about Brian Kelly, and I thought they were well supported and well reasoned. And you know, you get pushback, and I get it, because if you're the AD, you support your head coach, like, publicly. You may go to him and be like, huh, shouldn't we have a better, more active head coach recruiter? But you don't come out and say that. I get it. So Swarbrick definitely changed his position publicly about sort of how he saw the head coach in a recruiting role at Notre Dame. I'm not saying that before he was wrong and now he's right, or vice versa, but like, I was more interested in like, why did he change? How did this change? Opposed to like, haha, I've got you on this change. So, you know, he said Dabo Swinney was the reason. You know, he's talked about fit down at Clemson quite a bit in the past. Thinks they do it as well as anybody. And I think if you're looking at the college football playoff regulars, who are the teams that win in the playoff, Clemson is certainly the most like Notre Dame. I think Ohio State has some similarities. Alabama does not. LSU does not, other than their head coach now. So it's like, I thought it was kind of an interesting, refreshing, insightful take from Swarbrick there, because like, I think very rarely in these head coaching press conferences is anyone at a different program credited as being sort of like informational or like inspirational in some ways. And like, so that was kind of interesting to hear. And I think that would give me some, it'd give me a little extra juice if I was a Notre Dame fan, being like, all right, you know, if we're going to try to follow a formula here, but put a Notre Dame spin on it, Clemson's the formula to follow.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, and in the week since he said that, pretty much everyone's left Death Valley.
Yeah.
Recruits included. So that will be put to the test, although Dabo Swinney has certainly proven it in the past with his back against the wall there. Not that it's against the wall here, but it's definitely it's a little Alabama-esque with the turnover on staff that he's dealing with right now, both on and off the field. I mean, that was a place where nobody left, and right now a lot of people are leaving. But he's had a lot of long-time GAs, a lot of long-time analysts. I think they've got a good pipeline there, and they'll be just fine. But no, it was refreshing to hear that, like, spoken out loud in a public setting, because, you know, Clemson visited those guys a couple of years ago. You wrote about it. I think Notre Dame's takeaways were a little bit more similar than we are different. And Clemson's takeaways were, you've got this incredible brand and this and this and this, and you're not really using it the way you probably should be. Especially when it comes to, you know, daily operations and facilities and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And, again, why, you know, I've said this a million times, not that you want to emulate another program, but, like, forget the slide, forget the mini golf course. Like, why is Clemson got to be at the forefront of concussion research? Why do they have to have the fanciest and newest training stuff and recovery stuff? Like, why can't Notre Dame ever push the boundaries of that?
The functional stuff.
Maybe we'll start to see that now. At least they're at least acknowledging things can be enhanced here. And I think that was the exact word Marcus Freeman used, right? We're going to enhance everything across the board. And, you know, that's easier said than done. And he couched it appropriately by saying, like, look, we've been in the playoff two of the last 3 years. Like, we're close, but we're not there yet. I think those are all the things, if you're a diehard Notre Dame fan, that you want to hear, because we've said it again and again, this program's in a damn good place. It's a known commodity. But we did think there was a little bit more meat left on the bone for them to get after. And, you know, at least publicly, like, there was an unwillingness to acknowledge that, whether it's on signing day and coaches are getting up there saying, we can only recruit X number of people from the rivals top 100. Right. We can only do this. What do you mean? Clemson got blown out by Ohio State. So we got blown up by Alabama. What are you talking? Like, it, there was always a
defense.
What aboutism or whatever you want to call it. I mean, it got very, very tiring for the fans. It got tiring for us. The first next step that you asked Brian Kelly about is apparently Brian Kelly going to the SEC and Notre Dame promoting a coach who was not there when Brian Kelly said that, who thinks he can win it all there. And I think is genuine in his belief about what he all. I mean, there's a certain assistant coach we will talk to who has said, no one told me graduating champions there was a saying and not something they actually took seriously 365 days a year, because, like, they just did not operate off the field the way you need to if you're serious about winning in the playoff. And I think the attitude around all of that has changed for the better. Now it's about implementing that and seeing if you can push that boundary without sacrificing everything that got you there so far. And I know you've written about the schedule, like Brian Kelly won a lot of games. He won almost all the games he was supposed to win, which is why I think he's going to do good at LSU, by the way. Like, the guy wins the games he should win at LSU. Outside of Alabama, you're supposed to win damn near all of them. And I think he will eventually do that down there. But you know, how do you do that? How do you do that without overlooking a Navy or a Rice or, you know, some other opponent, Purdue, whomever it may be. And the schedule is going to be much, much tougher from the get-go for Marcus Freeman than it probably ever was for Brian Kelly. And that's not knocking Brian Kelly. That was just the reality of the circumstances both walked into. So I'm excited. I know you're excited. Fan base is definitely excited. You know, there's almost universal agreement. I mean, Jack Swarbrick acknowledged the risk and the nervousness of, you know, having a first time head coach who's never done it before and how you'll never really know until, you know, the ball's kicked off. But you know what? There's just as much risk in not hiring that guy because he's going to go somewhere eventually and he's probably going to have a lot of success. And you may have missed your chance if you were Notre Dame. So, you know, for all the drama and craziness and podcasts of last week, it is pretty crazy to look up like 72 hours after Brian Kelly left and be like, wait, this thing's already settled.
It is straight. It's amazing to me how quickly a guy who won, how many games did he win? 112? Like, how quickly he's old news.
Right.
Like, all-time winningest. Like, I know there are people that don't want to hear about him anymore. And he's making it very difficult for me not to pay attention to what's going on. So I'm sorry, you guys are just going to have to bear with me on some of my Brian Kelly retweets over the next weeks and months. But
they're going around the Goog that much.
Oh, yeah, 100%. So that it just... It will be interesting to me to sort of see how Marcus Freeman taps into the optimism and the energy. I mean, I think to reference one of your points you were just making, like, it will be good to stop hearing about the ceiling Notre Dame hits in recruiting that was constructed by the head coach. You know, like, don't tell me you can't do something because things were put in place to stop you from doing it. I think Marcus Freeman sort of gets to reimagine everything. Gets to reimagine what Notre Dame football can be, how high it can go to the, you know, at the top to winning in the playoff. And look, just recreating what Brian Kelly did would be a hell of an accomplishment. Like, let's be clear about that. So how he, you know, the risks that he takes and the changes that he makes, I think are going to be fascinating to write about and podcast about over the next 3, 5, 7 years. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But I think Notre Dame has a different level of hope than it has had in a while, which is kind of a funky change just based on how much winning they've done over the last 5 years. Well,
it was a high floor and I wouldn't say low ceiling, but there was a ceiling.
Right.
Now, yeah. I don't know what the floor is. I don't know what the ceiling is. And that's nerve-wracking and exciting at the same time.
Yeah. It's that gives, like, people who covered the team like a little juice because there's just an entire new catalog of stories to tell. And even if there's not a ton of new people around, there will be some, but I think that's part of the intrigue about where Notre Dame football is going.
Absolutely. It's going to be exciting. I think they don't have any more open practices. I know on campus,
they do not.
They're going back for Christmas. Soon.
Correct. They break, I believe, on the 23rd. So we will have access to Marcus Freeman and Mike Elston, the recruiting coordinator, on Wednesday after signing day. And then there's media access post practice, I believe, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of next week. They break, reconvene in Arizona on the 26th. And there is some mandated practice viewing down there. There's also like a media day where everybody's available. So the media access down in Arizona, I think, will be really good. But in terms of watching the team, that will be somewhat limited.
We will probably be back with you Wednesday after signing day is wrapped up.
Yeah, but we'll definitely do a wrap-up podcast for signing day because Notre Dame's sitting there at 23 commitments. Their receiver class is a little bit in jeopardy right now, as I sort of wrote today in sort of the preview of signing day. Like, what happens with CJ Williams and Amarion Walker is to be determined. There's a safety named Devin Moore who decommitted, really Notre Dame's only decommitment during this time, which when you put that in context of, I think Oklahoma had 10, Oregon had 7 or 8, Florida had a bunch. Like, Notre Dame done a really nice job sort of holding the line. But can they push it forward a little bit in the next week, next 48 hours, just to say, we'll see. But yeah, the Shamrock will return later this week for certain, to talk a little bit recruiting, you know, get into the, I don't know if the staff will come together until after the bowl game, but a heavy recruiting focus for our next episode of the Shamrock later this week. So Matt, unless you have anything to add on this point, I don't know if
just,
what was your, what was your big takeaway from Marcus on his radio junket tour of Dan Patrick and Rich Eisen? Die Hard is a Christmas movie, I thought was significant.
94 Feet with Jay Billis. His first job was as a busboy at Texas Roadhouse, which was where we'd go at the end of every semester to celebrate at Penn State, because that was about as nice as it got in State College, Pennsylvania, especially on a college kid's budget. So I already liked the guy. That was pretty cool. He also said his youngest is his favorite kid, which is probably a smart move. I did want to shout out, because I don't think we'd mentioned this podcast yet, and it's about a week old at this point, but the Columbian newspaper up in Washington, Meg Wachnick, apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name. She spoke to Tobias Merriweather's family about Brian Kelly's last visit and Burt Enns and how awkward it was and how he went out to take a call. Like, just great local reporting, great local journalism. This is why you should subscribe to your local paper and your newspapers, because that's the kind of stuff that only they can get. And it really gave you almost a fly on the wall experience of what it was like during decision time for Brian Kelly on that Monday, 2 weeks ago. Tommy Reese, you know, confirmed much of that during his hit on Ryan Russillo's podcast on Friday. So rarely do you get that like glimpse behind the curtain without anonymous sourcing, and Notre Dame fans, for better or for worse, LSU fans, I should say, for better or for worse, got that. Thanks to the Columbian and thanks to the Russillo show. So I wanted to shout out both those, because if you haven't read or listened to either, I suggest you do.
Yes, I definitely co-sign on that one. So until we return later this week with the next episode of the Shamrock, he's Matt Fortuna. I'm Pete Sampson. Thanks for being with us. We will chat with you on Wednesday, post-signing day, and access to Marcus Freeman and Mike Elston after the first recruiting class of the Marcus Freeman era begins to sign with Notre Dame.